Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Before I start, I hope that you'll come out to hear Calestous Juma tomorrow morning. He really is an outstanding speaker and speaks very passionately about the importance of education and training as we work our way through agriculture. And thank you for coming this morning early. It's an early hour. I've had only one cup of coffee. That's for two reasons. One, I couldn't get a second one down. And secondly, if I had too much, I will talk even faster than I normally do. This is the first time I've greeted a group with the breadth of the message that I want to give today. I've been on a member of NIFA and USDA only since October the 4th or 5th, I think is my first day in Washington. So what we're going to hear this morning are the thoughts that I have about NIFA and how NIFA will integrate the best of what we have done in agriculture research and seek to draw more of the young science into our area of science and endeavor because of the significant opportunity, number one, and number two, of significant societal challenges. So to do that, I'd like to review briefly a bit about NIFA, about Secretary Vilsack's goals, about Undersecretary Roz Shaw's goals, and then describe how NIFA will be a real change at CSRES, not window dressing, why it has to be this way if we expect OSTP and OMB, Office of Management and Budget, to find a way to continue to fund science and technology, research and education, and extension at our land-grant universities and institutions across the country. So I've used this title today to give an indication of how we're how we'll talk. I'm not sure how this goes. Is that you or me?
I think I'm going to have to take care
of really?
It.
Really?
That's right here.
No, I think I'm in control.
You're good. Okay, good. Yesterday it didn't work.
I'm a control kind of guy. Just a little bit of history. The National Institute of Food and Agriculture, which we have talked about as NIFA, was recommended by NRC reports from about 1972 onwards. So the National Research Council was recognizing even 35 years ago that there was a dearth of interest and involvement and funding thereof in agriculture and extension and education related to agriculture. So why did it take 37 years to get here, or 36 years? The normal time for an NRC report to be acted upon is 8 years. For every NRC report that's developed at the National Academy, about 8 years later, somebody in Congress takes note and implements something useful, hopefully useful. So why did it take 37 years? 36, but who's counting? So it was in 2008 that the Farm Bill did authorize, and then in 2009 provided appropriations to establish NIFA. I remember the first time I used the phrase National Institute of Food and Agriculture was at the garden party at the Academy about 1990, must have been about 1996, when I talked to Mary Clutter from the National Academy, from the National Science Foundation, and asked, why is it that there isn't more research that is being translated from the fundamentals of National Science Foundation into use and relevance in agriculture? We need higher visibility. And that didn't happen. I don't know how many of you in the audience have been calling for a NIFA or something like it. I'll bet there are a few. Is there a show of hands of those who have talked about the need for more science funding and a new structure? There you go. So we've got a lot of you who have recognized that this is something that's important. And we ought to be, like my former chairman of the board, Bill Danforth, said, we ought to diagnose the problem and treat it. First, let's diagnose it, and then find a treatment to ameliorate the symptoms. But let's bring about real change as we do it. So the National Institute of Food and Agriculture will contain combinations of recommendations that came from that Danforth committee, which was authorized in, I think, 2003 or 2004, by a congressional addition to an agriculture bill. And then with the help of the APLU and input from a wide variety of stakeholders, including the private sector and universities and institutions across the country, to create what is now NIFA. And NIFA today isn't what it was originally envisaged by the Danforth Committee. In fact, the Danforth Committee was relatively narrowly focused on the competitive grants activity of what is now NIFA. And it was seen that I mean, if it was to be most effective, that's what the committee thought it should be. But indeed, I think the transformation into having the director of NIFA be charged with all of CSRES activities plus a few others makes some degree of sense. But it was seen as envisaged as a new opportunity, or essentially, but more than an opportunity, an imperative to grow the support for agriculture research across the U.S. and equally as importantly, to see how we can get peripheral goods from that research effort. Those who have worked in the CGIAR system, I sat on the board at ICRISAT in Hyderabad, India for 2 terms or 6 years, and I learned the phrase peripheral goods. And what that simply means is, how do we make the use of what we've learned from our resources and our activities that could have implications or applications other than what we thought it would be for? So I think we need to find ways to find peripheral goods for our research, including extending our activities more broadly to help those in developing countries become more self-sufficient in their food, in their response to climate change, in their nutrition goals, etc. So we want to grow our support in general. So why is this the right time for change in support of agriculture? There was published in September of this year a report from the National Research Council called A New Biology for the 21st Century, Ensuring the United States Leads the Coming Biology Revolution. And there are several interesting parts here. I'm not sure how many of you have read this report, but if you've not, I commend it to you and hope that you'll pick it up or see it online on the National Academy website. And the study was funded, the appropriations or the funding for this study came from the NIH, the NSF, and the Department of Energy. You notice that agriculture wasn't there. It was funded by those three different funding agencies for research. The committee looked at the base of the knowledge that's accumulating, all the information about genes and genomics, about proteins, about human welfare, about human diseases, obesity, and nutrition, and said there are some grand challenges in society that need to be addressed in a different way, in a bigger way than ever before, because the tools are available. We have all the rapid diagnostics that we would need. We have all the capacity to measure gene expression or changes in soil temperature or with monitoring from the atmosphere. We know how to follow the emissions of the nitrous oxides and the methanes and water usage in agriculture. So let's find better ways to use it by creating a new initiative. And this group, which didn't have any plant science in it except for one person, the committee included one plant scientist out of about 15, and that was Elliot Meyerowitz from Caltech, not an agriculture person, but an outstanding plant scientist. And the grand societal challenges require contributions from the fields, from wide fields, and the challenges that this committee raised are the following: food production, protection of the environment, renewable energy, and improvement in human health, agriculture. All four of those grand challenges, societal challenges, start with agriculture. And this advice didn't come from us. It came from those outside. And it's calling for a new initiative, new funding, that would include, that would provide support for physicists, mathematicians, modelers, computationists, chemists, biochemists, biologists, biomedical scientists, extension, education, the whole works, top to bottom, involvement of a broad range of expertise both science and social science, to achieve goals that affect society. And we don't know where this will go. It is getting the report is getting some traction. Secretary Vilsack has used it. We've informed him of some of the report, and I think we'll see a broader range of applications and discussions from here out. The committee was led by Phil Sharp from MIT and Tom Connolly from DuPont. Secondly, there are other reasons why it's the right time for NIFA as well. We have a science-friendly president and administration that values science. More than a dozen members of the National Academy are appointed to positions of influence in this government. John Holdren is an advisor to the president and the head of OSTP, the Office of Science and Technology Policy. That's different. We haven't had a Stephen Chu head of a department. We haven't had Jane Lubchenco and other members of the esteemed societies, yours and others, in these positions before, because we've not had a president for such a long time that placed science as an important part of his administration. The Secretary of Agriculture, Vilsack, also is a strong advocate for the role of a diverse agriculture and agriculture in general. As you know, in his role as a governor of Iowa, he spoke forcefully and built the agriculture base and economy of agriculture in Iowa while he was governor. But he's a broad-based person, and that's represented in his diversity of the appointments that he's made, from Deputy Secretary Merrigan on the one side, in one capacity with her emphasis on sustainability in agriculture, and Dr. Rajiv Shah as the undersecretary. Dr. Shah is not a PhD, but is an MD, comes out of a background of nutrition, but also of economics and business, and was at the Gates Foundation before he accepted the role at the USDA. So it's the right time in terms of administrative support, because we have people at the highest levels recognizing that science is an important component, and that agriculture and its role is critically important for the success of the U.S. In all of these areas, including nutrition, well-being, environment, climate, and renewable fuels, and so forth. So in his recent talks, the secretary has mentioned five priority areas that agriculture today must address. And as we look at these five priorities, these are priorities of grand societal challenges, but they are the ones that most effectively might describe agriculture going forward. So as you as administrators and instructors and members of the scientific community think about where we ought to be heading in our programs, one thinks about about specific goals, including these, and I'm sure you've done the same. Those are climate change, bioenergy, and climate change and how agriculture adapts and responds, all the way from new disease models to changes in weather per se, the whole breadth of implications, bioenergy and renewable biomass. Many of us extend this into natural products and the wealth of opportunities that one sees by having plants be harvesting one of those 400,000 secondary compounds that plants make, making new use of them. Food safety, nutrition, buried here is also a real concern about childhood obesity and the importance and the role that obesity plays in our growing health concerns as we age. So nutrition and obesity are focus areas for the secretary. And then in international food security. And international food security, we'll come back to that in a bit, as we describe some of the activities that we expect to implicate or implement. Secretary Shah, Undersecretary Rajiv Shah, is also a visionary in how he sees agriculture and its relevance in the world. And I think you'll be pleased to learn more about him. I hope you can have him at your institution or at your society's individually. But he wants to make himself visible and as an advocate for change in agriculture, and it's to Rajiv that and Rajiv then recruited me to the position, current position I'm in. It's funny. About a month before Rajiv took his job, I spent a half an hour on the phone convincing him that he should take the role as undersecretary. And turnabout, I guess, was fair play. And he argues that our intramural and extramural programs across the USDA should be in closer alignment. There is good alignment, but not as close as it can be. And that it's there should be focus in what we do. We are a small agency. The budget of NIFA is just a little bit, for distribution and grants and contracts, is just a little bit north of $1 billion. That compares to $30 billion for the NIH. We're a tiny agency in comparison. And that $1 billion includes coverage of formula funds, as well as fundamental research, and all of the very many specific programs that Congress has inserted over the last 30 years. It's those insertions that have caused us pain, a little bit of heartburn, because those insertions have taken away from the flexibility that we need to make the changes in our research programs that allow us to respond to the goals that the Secretary set out. And we'll be looking for ways to consolidate some of those programs into specific areas. I looked at the list of earmarks, and yes, we have a lot of earmarks this year in the Ag Bill. There were five of them in aquaculture, and about four or five in biofuels and biomass, all of them from neighboring states, all of them asking for special assistance. Makes a lot more sense to put those into competitive grants and have an outstanding program in aquaculture, or grow our aquaculture involvement, or to lump those in biomass and biofuels into programs that would help us get the brightest and best into solutions of our problems while doing so. And that's you'll hear that theme over and over in this administration, the importance of growing the pool of funds for competitive grants, and I'll tell you how I propose to use it as we go along, because there is an outstanding role here for extension and education if we do this right. And as we grow it, we raise the water level for all boats, not just for one. The undersecretary is focused on all aspects of RE. He wants focus to be implemented. He wants to have impact through scale, through grants that are, in some cases, larger and broader based than we have in the past. This may and there will be an opportunity for involvement of these from across regions, between institutions, across all areas of the U.S. And we want to market by outcomes. We are an outcomes-driven institution. While upstream research is fantastic and a basis for all that we need to do, it's how we focus that upstream research that might be funded by the National Science Foundation and perhaps a bit by what we would do at NIFA. It's how we implement across the ways to the community that we serve and to those that we seek to educate. That will be the telling part of whether or not we've been successful in the change of CSRES into NIFA. And the scorecard is outcome-driven. The Undersecretary has added six deputies to his staff to provide input and policy guidance in those five focus areas that I mentioned for the Secretary. These deputies will help Dr. Shaw learn more about agriculture, learn more about climate research that is going on in agriculture, whether it's ARS or in NIFA, and find out where those gaps are and bring focus to how we might change our directions or our specific RFAs in competitive grants or in our role as distributing formula funds to ensure that we are closer alignment with the goals of the administration. So why is another reason why this is the right time is the lack of support for agriculture and the area initiative earlier this year. It really was a wake-up call for many of us in the plant sciences. You know, the fact that the NIH got $10 billion and NSF 3.6 and agriculture got zero should say something to us. And as we called around to try to figure out in OMB and OSTP why there was no support for agriculture, it was at the end of the day, as the two budget committees went back and forth, many of you have heard this story already and know the facts as well as I do, But when it got to the highest levels in OSDP and OMB, the bottom line was they did not trust the way the USDA distributed resources and said, we know that all the funds that go there are earmarked and we don't want to give them anymore. So that is a real call to change, from my perspective. We don't have the respect in the highest levels of government in the White House, and we don't have it on in Congress. How do we get it back? After all we do is feed people, right? So what is it that we've missed, and how do we get aligned so that it is more impactful, if it's not impactful enough, though I'd say we've done a great job, perhaps too good a job in some respects. But how do we get a greater attention for what needs to be done in the future, and how do we make sure that the ranks of this organization and the American Phytopathological Society and the Horticulture Society don't continue to lose members but gain them back? What is it that we need to do to attract the bright young brains and minds into these grand challenges of society? Because right now we're not getting them. And I'd say that there are a few things that need to be done, and we'll try to do what we can in NIFA to help this change. So what do we do in response? I think the response was that we need to be more focused on what we do, bring greater attention to what the USDA, NIFA, and ARS, and you all in the land grants do, and to ensure that it becomes commonplace in discussion. That's helped a lot by the new biology for this new report, the NRC report that is described. I think that's going to help us a bit, but we have a lot of work to build on top of that if we're going to harvest from that initiative that was started out. So a vision needs to be created, and then we need the backing of everybody in this room, plus all the other 85 or 95,000 plant scientists around the country. We have been split for very many years, and each of us going as a society to the Hill and asking for special treatment for soybeans or hogs or blueberries. And that has hurt us, has damaged us over the years. The biomedical community, as you well know, is well represented by FASEB, and we work in a unified voice. This society, this Tri-Societies, is doing an outstanding job trying to pull together the greater unification that we speak with one voice that needs to be expanded to the other efforts that are also ongoing. And I hope that your leadership looks to other societies to find out what they are doing and find a way to bring them all together. I know the American Society of Plant Biology is trying to do a similar thing. And they're working with other societies. So let's get all the societies together behind the same leader or the same group of that goes forward. This is not about how good is my society. This is about how good is agriculture. And it's not about how good is agriculture in the U.S. It's how good is agriculture around the world. And the unity starts with us as a group realizing that we're all in this together and that we'll do far better than what we're trying to do individually. So let's make the necessary changes to create reality, which is a prerequisite for additional funding in the future. When I interviewed, I talked to folks in OSDP and OMB and tried to get some promises for the future. And the only promises were that we will consider increases if you create change, if there is real demonstrable change. So they're really willing to help us. They know what the opportunities and needs are, but we have to do our part as well in NIFA and in USDA in general. So what is NIFA? NIFA is the agency now that is responsible for extramural research extension and education or funding thereof, not implementation, of course. It's built on the outstanding history of CSRES. Dr. Colleen Heffron and her colleagues over the years have really developed a CSRES that has outstanding program leaders, research directors. The AFRI, the Competitive Grants Program, is ranked very highly as it gets external reviews from the National Research Council and so forth. And there have been some criticisms of other parts of the activities of CSRES, but they're all fixable. So we want to, and this is, we will be done, the growth will be done in the first few years at least, by expanding the competitive grants programs. And we, as I said, we have a clock, a timeline that says we need to accomplish a certain number of things before expecting, even in the next appropriation cycle, that we can do better than we have this year. This year, as you know, there's an increase of about $62.5 million that went into competitive grants. We need to, we'd like to see that increase significantly. The budget or the authorization of NEFA called for a budget of not less than $700 million in competitive grants. We set earlier a floor of $1 billion in competitive grants. That would get us a significant increase that would be more effective in growing research in our field. We want to bring focus to those funds that are distributed by formula while maintaining the essential services in rural and urban America that we serve as extension agents and as educators. And the reason we can't do everything is because we are a small agency, and I think as you help us in your work in education and extension at your universities, I hope you'll be cognizant of those goals so we can trumpet those successes as well as those that come out of fundamental research. We do that not very well, it turns out, at the USDA, and we need to make sure that the public begins to understand the importance of what we do. I'd like in 10 years that NEFA will have the same visibility as the NIH when there are missives that are sent to the press, that the word of either USDA or NEFA carries the same weight to a science reporter as does a discovery of the NIH. Maintaining essential services goes without saying. The question is, how can we do that while still bring additional focus? And that's one of the challenges we face. And we do need, as I said earlier, to place an emphasis on attracting a new generation of scientists to the world of agriculture. A lot of this is agriculture that's different than it was when I was a graduate student. And the urban agriculture that we know we know the importance from the First Lady's perspective and from others of you who have served as extension agents or serve now as extension agents in our urban settings, it's important that this continue to be seen as a place of not just expanding need, but an opportunity to attract the next generation of scientists into our field. It would increasingly come from the urban areas, and we need to find ways to reach them, perhaps through our outstanding 6,000 or 6 million 4-H members and all of you who work so diligently to help the 4-H be successful. I talked to 4-H leaders a couple of months ago at the Danforth Center, had an opportunity to talk about programs that I saw were important. This is before I had accepted this position. And they are eager to be involved. They're eager to show their students, the young students that they engage in high school. Got to find those ways to get them into laboratories and fields and experiences in agriculture and bring them along as the next generation while still relying and pulling from our rural environments. I grew up on a little farm for a number of years. Dad was a sharecropper before he changed his profession, and agriculture at those days, small farms in Ohio are now larger farms. The house I was born in is still there, and I think the bedroom is still there where Mom birthed me. But that's about it. The hedgerows are gone. The trees are gone. But yet it's those kids and those young people in the rural areas that will define the economy of the future. We need to find ways to keep them there. Other countries are struggling more than we are in this regard because we largely have had most of that rural or that migration to the urban areas over the last 20 years. Have to make rural America the center of the green economy, the plant-based economy. So the important principles of NEFA are listed here. All activities that we fund must be monitored for being of the highest quality. With value for dollar, we want to show this taxpayer that they get good value, and they have generally done so. Activities should, to all extent possible, focus on those five priority areas or be aligned in some way with the priority areas of the secretary, Not all, of course, but we want to move more and more in that direction. We realize that changing programs in extension education takes time. It doesn't happen overnight, but the transition to these five priority areas. But as you have told me, others have told me, and from this audience, we are well aligned with these goals already. And there's a growing expectation under the goals that I have for NIFA, there will be a greater extension, greater involvement in extension and or education in each grant of large scale and moderate scale. Now the National Science Foundation, when you write a grant application, says what is broader impact? Tell me a broader impact study, and by the way, don't just staple it on the end of the grant, but make it an integral part. You know, we have addition by staples in our grants in these cases, and let's find ways to make it real. And NSF, you can expect that to be part of grants that would be submitted to NIFA, the competitive grants and the formula fund as well. And that means that in some cases, the extension agent or the educator will be the lead component, and may him or herself draw in research as a component to his education or extension research. So let's make real combinations that give opportunities to all. And so if in the next couple of years there's not a considerable increase in formula funding, this is the opportunity for extension and education to benefit from growth in the budget in NIFA. So the other important principles should be NIFA activities should be complementary to those of other research agencies and not duplicating. We don't want to duplicate what the NSF does or DOE does or NIH, but we want to be complementary so that as we seek partnerships across those agencies, we can show that complementarity and draw them in. There's been great partnership between NIFA and the DOE and NIH in the past, and that's growing. And also with the Department of Defense in our program for military families that are sponsored out of extension. So we should find ways. We will need to find ways, and indeed the Undersecretary is committed to finding ways to expand those partnerships that will bring new opportunities for you as well as for others in that have relied on the department for resources. We need to find ways, and I'm not sure how this can be done most effectively. We have EPSCoR states and non-EPSCoR states. We have underrepresented minorities, the 1890s and the tribal colleges, and many of these are not performing up to snuff. I'd like to see a time when we seek to eliminate EPSCoR from our definitions, and everybody's a strong state. So strong states will find their places in each of all states will find their ways in their places, whether it's in one of these five priority areas that can essentially be as competitive as any other state. So we want to build capacity in the underperforming institutions of research education, and reducing duplication between states and between institutions where we can. Seek to build in the context of those five priorities. So operationally, in 2010, the NIFA will operate pretty much as it has in the past. We can't create or make institutional change that's large in a few months. It takes more time, and we are currently in the process of looking at ways to make changes within NIFA to be more visibly changed. But in the meantime, you can expect that the RFAs will be in the greater emphasis in those priority areas, but there will also be some continued funding opportunities like those that you've seen before, the Specialty Crops Initiative, the Organic Foods Initiative, and others are still there. The biomass program is still there. So those existing smaller funds, I think they're ranging $28 million to $50 million for those programs, in addition to the competitive grants that are under AFRI, as you've known them, will continue, though I'm looking at every RFA that goes out to ensure that the wording, that special emphasis is placed in those priority areas. Secondly, there'll be greater emphasis, as I said, on increasing the integration of R plus E plus E, one of the E's in successful grants. And then we will look at, and we are looking at, structural changes to create institutes and centers within NIFA. Now, so the following are our proposals for what institutes we might have, and this follows closely on the institute structure of the NIH, Institute for Food Production and Sustainability, as you see as that piece, enhancing global food security, sustainability in agriculture, and making sure that production agriculture doesn't take a hit at the same time as we look forward to a more sustainable agriculture. Many of you work in sustainable ag, and you know that production agriculture can also be increasingly responsible in environmental protection and in sustainability. That won't change under this under NIFA. The Institute of Bioenergy, Climate, and Environment will be are important, and we've put those priorities of the undersecretary in a single institute. Energy independence through clean and biorenewable, bio-based systems, including for other natural products in addition to fuels, biofuels, and sustainability, and these is key. The climate change research, you've already seen it in NIFA. It was in different formats. How do we adapt to those climate aberrancies? How does the farmer and the seed system and the soil management strategy change from year to year or climate to climate? I was surprised to learn this year that the soybean farmers in the Midwest are drying their beans for the first time in years because the rains have come so late. Friends of mine that still haven't gotten their corn in northern parts of the Midwest. So there are changes. How do we make sure that we adapt to those immediacies? A special attention on food safety and nutrition. Whether it's food safety of standard agriculture or of alternatively produced agriculture, food safety is a big deal. There are 78 million, I think, is a number that food-borne illnesses that are reported each year. Large numbers of these come in certain sectors of agriculture. We need to find ways to detect and eliminate. Nutrition and obesity and reducing obesity are goals that we've set. We're developing 5 white papers within NIFA to indicate our goals for each of these areas of the institutes. We may or may not share them because we're not sure that they've been pressure tested yet. But we are setting goals for ourselves, and we're setting goals for you by doing it, because we expect that the implementation of these will come through the research and education that you all do. And a separate institute that really is a focus of community services and community development. Youth and Community Development is the name of the last institute. And in this case, some of the comments I made earlier are suitable about a need of education, but also the increasing role that you play or extension agents play in urban settings in creating resilient communities that can weather through the financial storms and find some challenges. In this case, more than any perhaps, or across extension and education, the challenges that you all have at the state level and state funding is really remarkably short-sighted. And I'm not sure and we can't replace those funds at the federal level. We look forward to learning more about the challenges that you have and in our discussions that we'll have through the next few months or coming year as Raj and I visit campuses. But it's important that we know what the challenges are and become the cheerleaders for how we can and in ways that we might be able to help in your shortfalls. We won't have an Institute of International Programs. We will have a Center of International Programs. We'll report to the director. And this is where I talked about peripheral goods. We want to leverage the knowledge and the commitment of our talent in the U.S. to enhance the lives of those in developing economies. Again, not duplicating what the Department of State does through USAID, not duplicating what NSF does, but being additive to those But the reality is that much of the work that would be supported through USAID and the State Department would be will best be done through our land grant universities, through the teaching of extension practices, through the teaching of agronomy and soil sciences and pathology and other sciences in addition to the molecular sciences. So how those tie together in this international center, we're not sure. There's already a small program in international program, a small international programs group at NIFA, and we're in discussions now about how to leverage what we know how to do best in our universities to take part in a mandate that the Secretary of State and the President have set for us in global food security. Food security is a different word than it used to be. It's not giving away the food anymore. It's building capacity and helping people to become self-sufficient. We have collaborations from the Gates Foundation, from others, in addition to USAID, and increasingly from our private sector who want to be helpful, who are dedicating and donating technologies, who are providing lab experiences for those from other countries. Everybody's involved, and I think we need to find a way to bring a bit more focus to how we can complement each other and not duplicate efforts. The numbers of NGOs have just gone out of sight in many countries, registered in many countries, have gone out of sight. Many of these are in food production or food supply or food security related programs, and we often don't know how to use those NGOs the best, as we most effectively as we work in those countries. The administration and functions of the institutes of NIFA will be that the institutes will be led by scientists and then aided as a deputy directors to by effective and experienced administrators who know USDA policies. So we can expect, or we would hope, that the new vision of NIFA will attract some scientists to come into Washington and to be head of these institutes, because it's a combination of science guidance plus management, administrative management, that will make us successful. These institutes will not be silos. There were many programs one would expect to be funded across institutes, so that if it's a large program on nutrition or a nutrition enhancement of foods, involves the same genetics, the same biochemistry as the processes that lead to disease resistance, and the same processes that lead to increase in natural products. These are the same set of biochemical pathways. So there will be programs that will go across institutes, just as there will go between multiple institutes and another federal agency. So we're not trying to create silos. We're trying to create groups of expertise that are joined together to focus on the Secretary's expectations and priorities, and then bring as many good scientists into those as we can. Again, the goal is to get new people into our field, whether we have to drag them in peripherally as a computational biologist who finally sees the light and then works on the computational aspects of photosynthetic light harvest or whatever else is there. It's the excitement of what we do that will get people here, and I think as we face those goals, those challenges, we'll need to vocalize and talk about them most effectively. We want to look for examples of best practices for operations of the institutions. I'll be visiting Francis Collins at the NIH and other directors at NSF and DOE, and looking at best practices and see if there's anything that we want to change. Maybe we don't want to change how we do things, but maybe we do. And then look at advice from external groups, you and other stakeholders that will use the services of NIFA as part of your own opportunities or your own activities. So just as a wrap up, there will be focus, scale, and impact of the work at NIFA, of the funding of NIFA. And these are the kind of things that we can expect to see, you can expect to see coming down as guidance through RFAs and other descriptors. And we do want to have impact on human health, on human condition. At the Danforth Center, we had a very simple phrase: to improve the human condition through plant science. That's what you do every day, and bringing focus to that to NIFA will be is logical. We want to be one of the places that, when there is another report that is that expects top-flight scientists to be at the table and discussing policy. They'll have somebody that has support from USDA, from NIFA, from ARS. And we have an outstanding organization that needs to be tightened, it needs to be focused, and it needs to be high impact so that we can be seen as a scientific enterprise that has the same scientific capability to be at the table with anybody in any other agencies. So I'll end my remarks there, thanking you for your attention. There's been a little bit of coming and going. You've come at an early hour of the morning. I'd love to hear some questions and comments and advice. If there are questions, I'd like to answer them. Thank you.
Okay, what we're going to do is have about a 15, 20-minute question and answer period if the questions are there. But we'd like you to move to the aisle. There are people with microphones that will come to you. I would ask that you identify yourself and your location or where you're from, if that would be okay with you. Thank you.
My name is Yael Hartman, science. An academic institution that has a very, very good college of environmental sciences, and we are, as living in California, we are trying to standardize and get funding with less funding and so on. So my question is, how should you prepare? I applaud what you've been presenting. I think it's the future. You're reorganizing. How do you think this should, how this should trickle down now in academic institutions? And should we, in fact, think the same way? Many of us are already doing it, as you are planning. And the second question or comment or request in helping us. Is this information available on the web?
Well, you've...
Is that on?
Now somebody else is in control.
Okay, you're going to have to shift over here. I'm sorry. I thought that would work.
Have I done something wrong?
There we go.
No.
All right, there we go.
Thanks. In the latter case, recognizing the challenges that universities are having, the University of California system, of course, is sitting right in front of it. I learned today about the hits that have taken place in Washington State. Michigan's talking about, again, eliminating extension education as a component of their land grant schools, of which I'm a part. So the challenges across the country are remarkable. One of the things I didn't talk about was I worked on the programs of NIFA and see much more requirement for matching funds that come through the out of our programs. We want to try to avoid that, the requirements for matching funds. Those funds may be the only thing we have going on in the short term. If we can't leverage what we have to sell, then the question is, what does the customer base want from it? What we found in the case of the military program is that the military program that supports the families of those who are overseas in education and extension and so forth came to us because we have, and you have in your extension portfolio, the capability to serve. And they recognized that and have come with an outstanding program. They came back again this year and offered us more resources to do it even more effectively and expand it. So I think in the short term, we need to rely on partnerships as much as possible. The New York City program and extension actually floored some of us. We did not realize how much this modest amount of funding that's provided by the USDA in the New York City area has leveraged almost 4-to-1 in dollar amounts by coming in from other groups. So we can be the focal point and build upon it through recognition of importance in the community. And I think in the meantime, as budgets are under stress, I don't see another way through. I think the short-sightedness of states that would cut some of the faculty members is unfortunate. If they are, I really hope that you all are doing a great job of focusing on those ones that you must have and must retain. and then find ways to bring in other talent by subcontracting or other contracting capabilities to get everything done that you want to do, or need to do that we can and others can support. You all have been focusing on these programs already. If I would have suggestions, it would be to find ways to align programs in a real and substantive way, not just packaging, but real involvement in these areas that have opportunity for growth. And then as those areas of growth, as more funds go into each of these institutes, you will find ways that extension and research can match up. You know, we do this all the time. When I found as a scientist at Washington University that there was more funding at the NIH for my work than there was at the NSF and the USDA, I went to NIH and I packaged it based upon where I knew the resources were. Now the challenge has been we have so few resources and competitive grants and discretionary funds in NIFA that it's a little bit, that's the major challenge. We're going to be doing some things differently in the agency this year that is a little bit more like the way the NSF operates, and that is looking for forward funding rather than trying to maximize our research dollars between years, spreading it out and increasing the numbers of grants we think in the first couple of years. That will bring new opportunities, but it will be arranged more like the NSF does it. So those increases in resources will be pretty visible this year and next, and then it will sort of flatten out. So look for ways to join in programs that are more substantive in size. We have also a real problem in the USDA, and let's get it right on the table, we have an indirect cost problem that limits the involvement of universities in USDA research. At the Danforth Plant Science Center, I had to monitor every grant that went out. I couldn't afford to have too many USDA grants at the Institute because it didn't pay the bills. It didn't pay the bills. And after all, your university is a fiscal operation that my chairman used to say we're a non-for-profit, we're a non-for-loss. So let's remind ourselves of our fiscal obligation with regard to what we do and help our administrators by bringing in grants that help them. Now that means we may need to find ways to get through this bottleneck of attracting the involvement of all universities in some administrative way or perhaps seeking changes in that indirect cost pool. So that's stopping us. It's pretty logical. If a university builds a huge life sciences building, and half of it is plant biology, half of it is non-plant or animals, and the red and the whites and greens are all together, who do you think that they're going to want to grow their program? Those that get NIH funding or those that get USDA funding? It's pretty logical. So we need to be at the table, at the budget table, all the way through this process, and not say that just because we're agriculture and land grant that we get a free ride. It doesn't work that way. Next.
Looking here, there must be another question. I'm sorry, there's one right there. And you have to come to the aisle if you could.
Yeah, Maya.
I've got one. If I might follow up,
yes. Right.
Just based on that, Ellen Bergfeld, CEO for Agronomy and Soil Science Society. Since you mentioned the challenge that exists just now with budget and so forth between USDA versus the other agencies, another major issue is being able to be at that budget table and being able to for an increased budget. USDA is not able to be there at the table in the same way that NIH and NSF are. They are able to go to lobby. Is there an opportunity for our societies, our members, to work collaboratively to be able to lobby on behalf and support of what's happening with NIFA?
Not only is an opportunity, it's absolutely essential. We really can't nickel and dime this. If our science is worth saving the world, it's worth paying for.
Hi, Susan Cole, USDA, I'm Leslie.
Given the limited funding in agricultural research, I was just wondering what your vision is with respect to the role of the NIFA versus agricultural research services. And supporting agricultural research, the process for increased funding growth, and opportunities for leveraging resources between banks.
One of the things that has taken place happened already in this interim year between when the bill for creating NIFA was signed and the appropriations of NIFA, there's been a lot of discussion between ARS and NIFA staff to find ways to be more in alignment, knowing that one should leverage not duplicate efforts as much as we can, make alignments between programs, and then align as much as we can to the Secretary's goals. So that's already taken place in the last year. There are also some operational change things within ARS that Dr. Nipley and I have talked about that need to be addressed. Need to find ways to make the agency a prime spot for somebody to apply if they want a job. Why is it that applications to the ARS positions are relatively, when you ask for plant biologists in the plant biology department or in a private school or a land grant, the numbers of applicants are 75 to 150. The numbers for ARS positions are way lower than that. Why is it? What is it structurally or in its operations would impede a bright young person from taking that position? After all, it should be a cherry position, right? There should be 200 applicants for that one. So what are the things that we have to look at those operations. And we have other ways to find opportunities. And as you know, ARS scientists can apply for AFRI funds or NIFA funds. And by raising that pool, we hope that they will be equally as competitive for those grants as people in our universities. And the university ARS extension partnerships are natural. I think that's a way forward. But there needs to be, again, perhaps a greater alignment across all the programs before that will really take place.
We have a question over here and then over here next.
Russ Ray, Commissioner Shea.
Or Russell. Nice to
meet you. Last evening, we all heard Dr. Jita talk about the importance of bringing science to society's challenges, as you're talking about. But one of his main points was the fact that basic science is sort of what the competitive grants program is sort of outpacing the applied research. How is NIFA going to make sure that applied research has a major role to play in taking care of society's challenges?
Russ and I go back to about 1962. We went to the same undergraduate college, so I agree. What I tried to say earlier, and I perhaps didn't say it as well as I should have, is that the basic fundamental work that's being done in plant science that is at the National Science Foundation is outstanding. We should choose not to duplicate that or try to be in competition with the NSF. But recognize that some of the big problems that we have, take the biomass problem, and how in the world are we going to raise enough biomass to meet the President's goals of 39 billion gallons of transportation fuels from renewable sources by 2022 or to 2030? How are we going to do that? It's going to take a whole combination of upstream science and applied science, including knowing that there are going to be more diseases on switch grass than we've ever seen before. And there are going to be challenges in nutrient uptake and sufficiencies. That's applied research versus development research, and then applications into how to do the agronomy. I think the opportunity for us to be the integrator between fundamental and applied research is just the same as it is in the NIH. That's what their mission is, and that's what we see ours to be. So I think some of these grants that you will see, the larger ones, will have a broader cross cut from fundamental through development research, development applied. You'll see it in the
RFA. Right here.
I guess.
It's on.
Is this on?
Yes.
Okay. Carl Green, Third Ridge, Virginia Tech. I think one thing of real concern is that outside of our colleges of agriculture, that the university administration apparently doesn't even know what the meaning of land-grant university is anymore. And, you know, I think this is a real issue, that what the vision of a land-grant university is and what we're supposed to be about and doing. I guess in looking at NIPA and past programs, I think the coordinated agricultural programs have been very successful in getting collaboration among universities that are doing common types of research, at least common subject matter and common crops. I think those have been very successful. And all universities are focused on the three missions, outreach and teaching and research. I guess my point as a researcher is to be careful that you don't try to accomplish too much when, if you say you want a lot of collaboration between many universities, and then if you start throwing in at the same time demands on so much going to education and so much going to extension, the amount of resources that are provided to do that is not enough to be truly successful in all those areas. So, you know, I think some independent funding for focused on education and extension and research might be a good approach rather than trying to force those together with limited funding, because we all incorporate all of those regardless of our program.
I take your point, and but often I find that maybe I'm in the wrong circle, that the connectivity between the researchers who are working on drought tolerance and actual field work, and actually working with extension in drought tolerant biology, because laboratory work is limited. And increasingly, our private sector is finding that they're not, those who are higher education, want that integration. It's not just that you are a good plant breeder, but you should know what the problems are, and it'll be easier for you to take your product and your invention all the way to the field. That's a piece that private sector likes, and I think increasingly they like to see it in universities. If we see that there may be a few, I'm not yet sure yet how to do the education part, whether to carve out education programs like the NIH does on, but they link those to program projects, and those program projects then employ scientists and students rather in a mission. So I still see them linked to research. I think that's the best way to do it, rather than having it separate. There are some separate individual, individual special needs or called needs fellowships. There's another word. National needs fellowships. I'm not sure why we have to. They're important on one or two at a time, but we have to be doing 20 or 30 or 40 or 100 of those, and integrating them in research. So I would sooner see opportunities for grants to be developed, and then see an opportunity to increase those grants through funding to recruit graduate students to participate on that. So I take your point, and we will certainly consider what the education component here is inserted. I would like to see some REU kind of activities where we get undergraduates into our labs in agriculture. Right now they're in NSF, and we don't have undergraduate research fellowships or something. Maybe there ought to be some of those, so that they are designated as agriculture, not as just natural sciences or basic sciences. So exposure, maybe too many of our administrators grew up without knowing where food came from. The same thing as the American public. Maybe our interview process for presidents ought to be, how much arts do you know, as well as science do you know, and where does food come from? I don't know what it is, but it sounds like the administrators are very similar to the general American public, not being aware of the importance of agriculture.
We have time for one last question. Sorry, there's only time for one more, and she's there, so.
I'm a safety analyst, and I wanted to follow up on a question about applied research. Just because when it comes to bioenergy, we're opportunity for increase in long-term.
I think the one of the goals that we have for researchers in these large priority areas is that they'll be characterized by large grants, multi-year grants, long in 5 years and renewable for another five of substantial size. And the DOE grants that have been awarded have been quite substantial. There's a recent set of $15 million for 5 years of one, 25, then another 20, another effort, another RFP went in recently for a $65 million grant. These are multi-institutional, multifaceted, with an education program, both from upstream to downstream. We do not want to duplicate what the DOE is doing. We don't want to be in conversion as much as the fundamental applied sciences and biomass production. That's how it's going to characterize ours. Ours will be different. It will be coordinated more with the DOE. I think we look for greater funding in the biomass and the biofuels arena, but it should be across areas. I mean, we can't afford to have 50 of these. We can afford to have regional ones. One expects the Southeast. The challenges in the Southeast can be different than the challenges in the Northwest. So partnerships across regions in the area of biomass and climate one could expect that would be a stronger way to be competitive than to try to break it up into smaller pieces, especially for the large challenge areas. And these will be noted in the RFA. Thank you all for your attention and for your questions. Please be supportive of wherever you can. If you have questions or reasons you're not supportive, let us know. And we want to respond to the challenges that you face, but also to focus on recognizing that we must increase the visibility and the support for agricultural research in this country, else we won't face our commitments as much as we need, nor will help the world face their needs. Thank you.